I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it is Saturday, time to go into the vault for an episode of Days Past. This one originally aired on July 12th, 2022, and it was part one of our series on the Sky Bridge.
Yeah, I remember we did this series after my family went up to visit Chicago for a week, and I got inspired by all the wonderful sky bridges up there. And it's timely that we're recording this vault intro now because my family just got back from a trip to Manhattan, where we went on another architectural boat tour and got to see a whole bunch more sky bridges along the way. And yes, it's pretty magical. I'm still a huge sucker for any sky bridge.
Which city has better sky bridges?
Oh, you can't compare. You can't compare. But I'm not going to get into a battle between Chicago and New York City over sky bridges. They both have some real beauties. But if anyone out there has an opinion, feel free to vote. We can discuss this on listener mail episodes.
Tired the pizza fight, wired the sky bridge fight.
Yes.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. This is Robert Lamb.
And I am Joe McCormick.
So I've been kicking around the idea of doing a Skybridge episode for a while. These have always captivated me whenever I've looked at cityscapes, both real cityscapes and cities that I've visited or lived in, but also just imagined cities, fictional cities, futuristic cities that one encounters in various films. These are, of course, we're talking about sky bridges or sky walks, or, you know, there are various terms that one might use for these. We're talking generally about enclosed bridges of metal and glass or stone or other materials that connect artificial heights to artificial heights. And I don't know about you, Joe. If you, I don't think we've ever talked about this. If you share my interest in sky bridges, if you ever gaze up at a sky bridge in a city and just try and imagine what it would be like to be up there in it, looking out.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are a number of these around the world, but they're rare enough that they stick out when you see them. I guess unless you're in a city that has a lot of them, like Calgary or something. But yeah, they look like something that's a kind of obvious solution that you would expect to see more of in a city that's full of tall buildings.
Yeah, that we'll certainly get into the practical sides of the sky bridge. But there's also something attractive about it that I find almost hard to put into words, because on one level, yes, there's a view that is available to one in a sky bridge. And generally speaking, you can often look in two directions at once, and that's pretty neat. But by and large, there's not a tremendous amount of difference between being on the 10th floor of a building and looking out at the city, as opposed to being on a 10th floor sky bridge and looking out at the city. But for some reason, if you gave me the choice between the two, the sky bridge, of course, is tremendously more attractive as an opportunity.
Well, and in a lot of recent sky bridges, they've started doing the thing where they make the bottom out of transparent materials, you know, some kind of tough glass. And of course, you know, the kids like to jump up and down on it. That's always fun.
Yeah. And I think maybe with sky bridges too, a lot of what makes the sky bridge attractive and interesting, it's actually wrapped up in a deeper understanding of bridges. Like we're essentially taking our already existing excitement for bridges, even though we see bridges all the time, and maybe that gets kind of like pushed down in our consciousness. But then it becomes new again when we look at something like a sky bridge. And also sky bridges kind of, I think, serve to exaggerate the feats of skyscraper building. Like, for instance, if I'm looking at just a normal skyscraper, it may be really impressive. But if I see a little, like a gargoyle up there, or some sort of like little space where a human being could potentially stand, for some reason, it draws me in more. Maybe if there's an artificial mountain aspect to it. And then seeing the bridge up there kind of does much the same thing.
Yeah.
So in this look at sky bridges, we're going to draw on several different sources. One of the main sources that I'm going to keep coming back to, though, is a wonderful history overview of sky bridges titled Sky Bridges, A History and a View to the Near Future by Anthony Wood and Daniel Safarik of the Council of Tall Buildings and Urban Habitat, published in 2019 in the International Journal of High-Rise Buildings. The authors here define a sky bridge as, quote, a primarily enclosed space linking two or more buildings at height. And they make a point of looking at structures that are, you know, at least six stories in height to set them apart from other mere pedestrian bridges and overpasses. Because I guess truly the sky bridge, or at least modern sky bridges, have a different feel altogether, though some of the especially older examples we're going to look at are not necessarily going to be that high in the sky.
Yeah. Especially a lot of the publicly accessible sky bridges or lower, whatever you'd call the lower versions of them, that aren't like connecting two towers of essentially the same building or buildings that have the same owner. Instead, they're, you know, forming a walkway for people or pedestrians along a sort of maybe like second story level in the city. I mentioned the example of Calgary earlier. Calgary mm-hmm. in Canada has an extensive network of what have sometimes been called sky bridges or skyways, but I think they're mostly on more like the second story level, and they're open to the public. You know, people can walk all around in them.
Yeah, when you look at the overall history of sky bridges, it's a mix of passageways for the elite, passageways for everyone, and sometimes you have kind of like double deckers where, well, one floor is for the residents, but the other floor is for tourists. So that sort of thing. Also, you have a mix of some of these are still very much in operation. Some are not accessible currently. Now, I was recently in Chicago. And while I was there, this was probably one of the reasons that I decided, yeah, I think now's the time to go ahead and do the Skybridge episode. It's because I took one of these architectural tours by boat in the city, which I highly recommend. It's a city that's steeped in architecture, and therefore, if you understand the architectural history of the city, at least just a little bit, you have, I think, a much better understanding of what Chicago is mm-hmm. when you walk around it, drive around it, etc. And one building in particular that you can't help but notice is, of course, the Wrigley Building. And indeed, you have this beautiful 14th-story sky bridge connecting the two sections. And at first glance, you might think it's made out of aluminum, but it's actually made out of Allegheny nickel. So that's pretty interesting. But yeah, if you look up pictures of the Wrigley Building, yeah, you'll definitely see this impressive sky bridge.
I was trying to remember if this shows up in The Fugitive, which is a movie that I deeply associate with Chicago architecture, though I'm not quite sure why. I mean, obviously it's in Chicago. I don't know what the architecture connection is.
I remember as a kid, I would look at pictures of sky bridges and think, and you know, also watching a lot of action films back in the day, I kept thinking, that there had to be like a great action sequence where the hero has to run through a sky bridge and maybe a helicopter is firing at him in the sky bridge, or maybe there's a fight on top of the sky bridge. And maybe my memory's faint on this. Maybe these things actually happened in some movie or TV show, but if they didn't, I'm surprised it never happened. It seems like the most logical place, like a weird place for some sort of a fight to take place. Like why didn't we see this in Highlander? Right.
The answer is insurance problems. That was a scene they wanted to shoot, but they couldn't.
Probably. Now, if you're a New Yorker, or certainly if you've even visited New York, you've seen multiple examples of this. There are some great examples of both old school and modern sky bridges. You can look up lists of these. I think there's at least one really picturesque one that's viewable from the High Line there. But then, of course, we don't have to go to New York in order to experience a sky bridge because, Joe, we live in Atlanta and we have a pretty noteworthy example of sky bridges or skyways as well, and that's Peachtree Center, designed by Atlanta architect John C. Portman Jr. Portman lived 1924 through 2017, and he's famed for popularizing the atrium as well as just leaving a profound mark on downtown Atlanta. And one of the things that he also did is, especially with, again, with Peachtree Center here, is we see this almost excessive use of sky bridges and skyways connecting these buildings to each other.
Yeah, if you drive around the city center streets, you will see a number of these.
Yeah, they have a very 70s modern look to them. So they're not the classical sky bridges. They're not these super modern looking ones you'll see in many of the examples today. But this is an example we're going to come back to later because it's actually with Portman's work that we see some of the more pronounced social criticisms of the basic concept of the sky bridge, which are interesting to get into. Now, another local example here in Atlanta, the High Museum of Art has some great sky bridges, part of the Renzo Piano designed addition to the core museum in 2005. Joe, I know you've walked through these.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so there you always get some brilliant sunlight. There's all that beautiful white architecture going on.
I think I associate them with the sudden feeling of being irradiated.
Oh, because you've been in the
climate
because
control.
You've been in the climate control galleries, and then suddenly, yeah, here's the sun. Now, Wood and Safarik point out that the most common function of the sky bridge is, of course, to convey traffic from one building to another without forcing individuals to descend down to the ground level or even below ground level, potentially exiting and re-entering the building, which, of course, if you're dealing especially with a building that has some sort of a security system in place and security check-ins and checkpoints, we can see where that would that could become problematic. Easier to have people enjoy access to both buildings via the bridge. And you also have situations where, okay, maybe we don't want people having to cross the street, deal with traffic, or adverse environmental conditions.
Yeah, I was trying to think, what would be the main factors motivating somebody to connect buildings via Skybridge versus just having people, enter and exit at the surface level like they normally would? And yeah, those are some of the main things that came to mind for me. Bad weather and climate, that's got to be a motivator, which is also true of places that have more underground tunnels connecting buildings together. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, also bad traffic and like thoroughfares that are hard to cross. So, for example, this would also include places where the streets are not always streets, where there's not ground on the street, such as cities with canals. Sometimes you have sky bridges to cross those. And then, of course, yeah, security concerns. Like if you have, high security government buildings or something, I imagine they try to limit the necessity to go outside and enter a different door and do that whole thing all over again.
Yeah, so obviously there are some basic reasons why you might have a sky bridge connecting two buildings. However, the authors here also classify some sky bridges as quote, enclosed programmatic sky bridges, meaning that there's something about them, something inside them to draw people to them beyond just mere conveyance. For example, the one example they give is the American Copper Buildings in New York City, built in 2016, which feature a robust two-story sky bridge full of common rooms and swimming pools for residents.
It's a great place to go swimming.
it's an interesting choice. I mean, it looks like it has a tremendous view, though.
I would imagine, yeah, view and just sort of novelty has got to be one of the main points for these enclosed programmatic sky bridges. Because, again, they're not so common connecting American buildings and in American cities that you're just numb to them now. Like, going in a sky bridge is kind of interesting and unique unless, you know, you just happen to be one of the few people who lives or works in buildings where you cross one every day.
Yeah. Now, they also bring up a few additional expansions on the form. One is something they call the sky plane, and this is essentially a shared horizontal roof structure for two or more buildings. And the example they bring up is Marina Bay Sands in Singapore. Joe, you should probably just look up a picture of Marina Bay Sands and just take this in, because I would have to say, I'm no judge of architecture here, but it looks almost a little bit ridiculous. It's this, it looks like there is a ship perched atop three identical skyscrapers.
Yes, it's a cruise ship. There is a cruise ship on the buildings.
Yeah, which, I mean, I guess it looks really cool up there. It makes me a little bit queasy to look at some of these aerial shots of it for some reason, but yeah, it looks very nice. And I guess, and certainly we can imagine, and so we may come back to this one as we think about some arguments to be made for similar structures. They also bring up the idea of building as sky bridge. So this is when the horizontal bar of the sky bridge is so massive in comparison to the rest that it is more of a defining part of the building itself, rather than something that bridges it. And this also is a statement one could make about like the nature of the sky bridge. One of the examples we'll come to in a minute, the sky bridge is not really firmly set in place. It's kind of setting in there, kind of slotted into place. Whereas building a sky bridge, it's like it's all one structure. The example they bring up is the CCTV headquarters in Beijing. This is a building I believe was built in 2011, and it looks basically like a really boxy upside-down U. Very cool design.
Yeah, I'd characterize it as it looks like it was built out of giant versions of the L-shaped Tetris blocks, and they're connecting above the ground, many, many stories up. But yeah, it's clear that this is not just a little hallway connecting the upper levels of a skyscraper. A substantial portion of the occupied part of the building is hanging over air.
Yeah, yeah. And it also looks like it could walk. It looks like two legs and a pelvis, but like they walked out of the Tron universe or something.
If you offend the master control program, this building comes walking at you.
It probably does.
Yeah.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, you might be wondering, well, what's the highest sky bridge in the world? Well, I believe if the Guinness Book of World Records is correct on this, it is the Petronas Towers in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. This is a double-deck bridge at the 41st and 42nd floors. It's 170 meters or 558 feet above the ground and measures 58 meters or 190 feet in length, weighs 750 metric tons. And this building opened in 1994. This one is really cool looking.
This is one of the ones I was talking about earlier, where it's essentially it's a connector between two towers that are the same building. Like, it's all one complex, but the complex consists of like a lower level thing and then two towers going straight up, and they're connected at the middle of their height by this sky bridge.
Yeah, this one's an interesting one to look at too, because first of all, like, it's so high up, and at the 40th floor, you can imagine a good case being made. Like, what if you need to get to the next tower? You don't want to go down 40 floors and then up another 40 floors. What if you could just walk over? And of course, you can adjust the math based on what floor you're trying to get to in each tower.
And I think it's an area of the complex that has increased foot traffic because there's sort of a sky lobby concept. Like, you go halfway up the towers and there's it's not just more, you know, regular office occupancy. There are, I don't know, lobbies and things for people to hang out and walk around and do at that level.
Yeah, and apparently one whole floor of it is open to tourists and is part of this lobby concept. The other is apparently closed off and more for residents or businesses, what have you. But it's neat that on top of this, not only is it mere conveyance, but also it adds at least a little bit of structural support, as well as a possible means of evacuating individuals from one tower into the other during an emergency. Maybe not a primary function, but one that they've apparently looked into. Like, what if there was an emergency in one tower, but the other tower was still viable? That's one way you could help get people out. It's also interesting that this bridge is not directly connected to the buildings. It's designed so that it can shift or slide in and out of them to counterbalance building sway from the winds.
Whoa.
This is something that I always forget about skyscrapers, and then I'm told about skyscrapers, and it kind of wigs me out a little bit, the idea that, yes, they're not just purely stationary. They have a little give to them. There's a little bit of sway involved. And certainly, if you have a bridge connecting two skyscrapers, you have to take that into account. All right. So at this point, I thought we might get into some of the history of the Sky Bridge. I mean, one of the things about our look at Sky Bridges here is we're not going to be able to look at every step in the process. We're not going to take you Sky Bridge by Sky Bridge through human history. But we thought it might be a good idea to hit on some key examples, some of which are more historical in nature. And before we get into some of the psychological aspects, before we get into some of the futurist ideas that are tied up with sky bridges. And so a great place to start is to travel to Italy.
Surely. I think maybe we should start by taking a look at the Bridge of Sighs, or the Ponte dei Sospiri in Italian. Suspiria, like the movie, the sighs.
This is a beautiful one. And this is one where if you look it up, you'll instantly recognize it. You'll instantly find yourself longing to be in a gondola with your beloved or some imagined beloved, perhaps with a glass of wine in hand.
Very ironically romantic. I'll get to that. So the Bridge of Sighs is a really interesting landmark in Venice, a city that is already unusual in many of its thoroughfares because many of them are not streets, but canals navigated by boat. And one of these canals, known as the Rio di Palazzo, is crossed over by a totally enclosed limestone bridge connecting two buildings on either side at the level of what looks like about the second story. It is covered with elaborate Baroque decorations, having been commissioned by the Doge Marino Grimani. And no, Doge is a word that had a meaning before internet memes. It has nothing to do with dogs. It was an office in medieval and Renaissance Italy. It was like it was kind of like being like a lord or some other kind of executive. So it was this Doge Marino Grimani who commissioned it. I think it came up in the early 17th century. Apparently, it is tradition for couples to kiss as they pass underneath the bridge in a boat. Or I don't know if it's tradition. It's at least something a lot of people do, I think especially tourists. And tourists are often taking pictures of themselves kissing with this bridge in the background. You can probably find plenty of those on the internet if you want. So what is the purpose of this hallway in the sky over the canal that's causing people to spontaneously break out in kissing? You might wonder, well, you know, was it connecting two wings of a library or an art museum? Maybe so people could move priceless antiques and books and artworks back and forth in the rain without getting wet or something like that. No, not at all. It was a bridge connecting the Doge's palace and the Inquisitor's facilities within to the prison on the other side of the canal. And so it's called the Bridge of Sighs because of the size of the doomed prisoners who walked within. Apparently, conditions in the prison were pretty nasty, so I've at least read the allegation that being confined there frequently resulted in death. So you would sigh, knowing your fate was sealed as you were taken across the Bridge of Sighs into the jail.
Well, that's not romantic at all. That's horrible.
And it makes me wonder, okay, then why in particular was this enclosed and not just an open bridge? I don't know this, but I wonder if the reasoning had something to do with like preventing prisoners from trying to escape by jumping over the edge into the canal and getting away.
I mean, also, I guess, given the nature of the work going on there, maybe you don't want them seen by anybody going by in a boat, sort of thing. I also have to say, now that you reveal its true nature, I kind of see a skull in this design. I don't know if that's, I mean, granted, we tend to lean into anthropomorphic details of things anyway, but now that I know its secrets, yeah, I kind of see these teeth and two eye sockets and a nose socket there.
Well, I can't find a close-up shot to look at right now, though I do think the bridge bears a certain family's coat of arms. It might have been the family of the Doge or someone else, but possibly that coat of arms looks like a skull. I don't know.
All right. Now, another interesting example from Italy takes us to Florence, and this is a 16th century example. This is Vasari Corridor. This was built in 1565 to allow members of the powerful Medici family to move freely between their residence and the governmental center there in Florence. Mm. So it's certainly an elevated enclosed passageway, reaching the full length. I believe it's an entire kilometer in length. There's at least one section of it that is instantly identifiable as a sky bridge, like there's a street below it, that sort of thing. But in other cases, there are buildings or businesses beneath Vasari Corridor. It literally just cuts through the city, built over, like in one case, it's apparently built over what was some riverside butcher shops, because, you know, you want to dump all of that, the leftovers directly into the river, but that smelled too bad. And so with a little Medici finagling, they got some jewelers in there as well. There's also a tower that it goes around because there was one stubborn Florentine who would not sell, and so they had to make their corridor go around this particular tower. And there's even a place where it basically cuts through the church of Santa Felicita, opening up onto the balcony into a balcony there, so that the Medici could take their corridor, attend mass, and I guess keep on going all the way enjoying a kind of privileged view of the city and places. You know, they get to walk from point A to point B in Florence without having to worry about their enemies trying to murder them. over time, portions of the corridor have been altered, destroyed, rebuilt, and I believe it was closed for a while and is once more open to tourists visiting the city.
You know, what I've always wanted is the ability to wake up, go to mass without ever stepping foot outside.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a power flex, right?
Yeah.
And it's definitely one to keep in mind when we talk about other examples and modern examples of sky bridges and similar structures. It would be kind of like if you didn't want to leave your bedroom to go to work and you didn't have working technology, you could say, what if I were just to physically extend my bedroom across town to the office? How about that? And that, I mean, that's essentially what the Medici did here.
Though, to some degree, I think what we're thinking of as a sky bridge really has more to do with just external appearance and like what is the stuff underneath it and how high is it and mm-hmm. things like that, more so than function, because there are other things that don't quite look exactly like a sky bridge, but they clearly serve the same function. I know there's like a long elevated passageway in Rome connecting Vatican City to some some chapel or palace or something there. And you can see it in pictures of the city, though I think a lot of it is uncovered, so it doesn't read exactly like a tunnel in the sky that's fully enclosed all around. It's more like there's just sort of this elevated bridge going over the rooftops or over parts of the city.
Yeah. To what extent do these examples feel like a bridge? Do they have this feeling of being above things or having some sort of a privileged passage through things? For instance, we mentioned cold cities or cities that have cold winters. The Chicago Pedway is a strong example of a system like this. Parts of it are elevated, but then also parts of it are completely underground, so that you know you don't have to go out into the elements during the winter to move from one place to another downtown necessarily. On my visit to Chicago, I wanted to go down and see it, though it was very pleasant outside, so we didn't have to go down there. But I was reading some accounts of people who, of course, really like it. Some who think that parts of it need some work. I think some people think it is a bit dank and perhaps needs a facelift of some sort.
Well, that opens up a theme that I'm definitely going to get to at some point, maybe later in this episode or maybe in the next one. But that when it comes to designing urban spaces, in many ways, I think form can be about as important as function. Like, it doesn't just matter, are these spaces traversable and do they get you where you're going? But like, there are pretty profound effects on our psychological well-being, depending on the various aesthetic qualities of these thoroughfares and tunnels and traversal spaces. And it makes a difference in our lives what these spaces are like.
Absolutely.
If you're spending your life walking around in like just dank concrete with no plants and no natural light and stuff, that does affect people.
Or it's also like having super reinforced transparent flooring in your sky bridge. I mean, that's fine for tourist scenarios, but if you're using this sky bridge just as a daily way of connecting, say from your office to the coffee machine in the other building, you don't necessarily want it to be a harrowing journey through the sky.
Yeah,
or at least not to get the coffee. Maybe on the way back, that would be empowering.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Now, if you look around at various articles about sky bridges, particularly like even if you go to the wiki page for sky bridges, you'll see some images of some examples. And there's a picture that has circulated a lot. This is a model that was found in an Eastern Han tomb in Henan Province in China. And this is quite it's quite interesting to look at. It is clearly a multi-story building connected by an enclosed sky bridge to another shorter tower or multi-story building, and it's pretty cool to look at. Again, this is quite old. I wasn't able to find anything to indicate that this is a model of something that was ever built in reality. Perhaps it was, or perhaps this was just a model that again went into a tomb. But I was able to look around, and I found some interesting things about sky bridges and things like sky bridges that were actually constructed in various Chinese palace complexes and gardens. So I was looking at the philosophical encounter embodied by the Wan Ming, by Wan Hui Zhou, published in Environmental Philosophy, Volume 7, Number 1. This came out in spring of 2010. So the Wanmingyuan, or the Old Summer Palace in Beijing, was a complex of elaborate gardens and palaces of the Qing Dynasty, built in the 18th and early 19th centuries. In 1860, during the Opium War, it was looted and destroyed by British and French forces. But according to Zhou here, the original gardens consisted of three Chinese gardens and a Western-style garden that had been designed by Jesuits. The Chinese gardens were laid out with Taoist cosmology and feng shui in mind, so that one stroll through these gardens was said to be one of contemplative depths. It wasn't just, you weren't just putting everything out of your mind as you strolled here. You got to contemplate the Tao.
Oh, do images of these gardens remain? I would be really interested to see the difference between that and the Jesuit garden.
There are schematics of what it looked like, and the ruins still exist. I believe I was looking at some photographs of this, mm-hmm. and it's still a site that I believe can be visited.
But probably not with all the vegetation in the original place.
I don't think so. I didn't find in there may be some really robust recreations of what these would have looked like, but they didn't come up in my research.
Hmm.
But if anyone out there has seen such an image, I would love to look at it. So in talking about this particular park, Zoe turns to some other examples. Zoe shares that the Shenglin Park of the Emperor Qin Shi Huang of the 3rd century BCE Qin Dynasty was said to feature covered double-floor passageways that allowed the emperor to move from one grand palace to another, quote, through the wilderness, and in doing so, quote, act mysteriously to avoid devils and meanwhile embrace virtuous individuals.
Whoa. Wait, so the skyways here were alleged to be so this emperor could keep his movement secret, sort of? Is that, am I understanding that right?
Yeah, if I'm understanding, well, so first of all, these wouldn't have been skyways per se. I think these were maybe situated on the ground. But yes, they would have been enclosed so that nobody could necessarily see him moving around. He is an important guy, after all. Mm-hmm. But also, he could avoid devils and embrace virtuous individuals, which, we can certainly lean into the supernatural interpretation of that. But also, it sounds like not run into people who I don't want to greet, don't run into people who wish me harm, and also, only encounter people who are worthwhile for me, the emperor, to run into.
Mm.
But then Zoe turns to an example that I think we can properly think of as a skywalk. He says, quote, in the Imperial Hualin Garden in the capital of Luoyang of Northern Wei, this is the 5th century, there was an island named Pinglei on which buildings were connected by a rainbow skywalk, where walking was like flying to and fro. Visitors moved about in this garden like celestial birds, up and down in a divine residence.
Okay, so when they moved about and it was like flying to and fro, does that just mean that they're crossing about in the air? They're high up and they can see all around? Or is there more significance? Like,
I think it's just a poetic way of saying that, yeah, the moving from one building to another via a bridge, that it creates this feeling of flying. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they were on zip lines or anything.
right. Yeah, I guess that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. Yeah, nor were they dressed like birds, but there's something almost supernatural about the experience of using these elevated walkways.
Yes.
So, and it gets a little more interesting when you look at some of the details here. So Luoyang is certainly a real place, and it's one of the oldest cities in China, which is certainly saying something. But Pinglei is also the name of a mythical island. And in fact, Pinglei is said to be where the elixir of life and the 8 immortals may be found. The connection here is, of course, that gardens of this sort are meant to be quote-unquote fairy lands. And in fact, Pinglei can be translated as fairyland. So these are places of supernatural beauty that invoke different models of reality. Or in the earlier example, you're contemplating the Tao as you walk through it. And it's mentioned by Zoe that tall buildings as well were thought to invite the spirits to reside in them. It's neat to think of, like, I feel like these descriptions that he's discussing here, like, they really draw in things that are certainly unique to, like, the poetic Chinese interpretation, it seems, of these structures. But I think also they get at our universal attraction to these things. Like, again, there's something about the skyscraper. There's something about not only the sky bridge, but bridges themselves that invite us to them. You know, if you're in a little park and there are bridges, you got to walk across that bridge, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. I feel the same way. I'm always attracted to bridges and spaces that are not just normally readily accessible. Like, you know, if I see an island in the middle of the pond, I do want to go to it. I want to stand there.
Yeah.
But of course, the same applies to locations high up. And this is something that I think is a pervasive strain of thought in the ancient world. I guess maybe even not just the ancient world, but I would say the pre-industrial world, the world before skyscrapers became common in city centers everywhere, where, you know, you just have like secular urban density driving occupancy higher and higher. In the pre-industrial period, I think there was a pervasive association between physical altitude and, like, the spiritual elevation or holiness or the gods. I mean, I think about how many different types of, like, tower-type structures are associated with either royalty or divinity, going all back, mm-hmm. all the way back to, like, you know, the ziggurats of ancient Mesopotamia, where, you know, it was literally believed that in some sense the god resides on the top, or the god at least will come down to the top in some cases, and royal towers, royal palaces with, you know, things reaching high up in the air. That's I think we're still impressed by tall buildings now, but I think it's lost some of the magical oomph that it once had in human minds.
Still, the would-be demigods of today, like, where do they want their offices? Where do they want their apartments? They want to be at the top, right?
Yeah. And
we're still drawn to that. Speaking of really tall buildings, one more note about Liu Yang here is that between 516 and 534 CE, it contained the Yongning Pagoda, which at an estimated 9 stories in height, and I think there's some back and forth about exactly how tall it was, but at roughly 9 stories in height, this was one of, if not the tallest buildings in the world at the time, according to the source I was looking at here. It was destroyed by a lightning strike, which then burned it to the ground. Now, I have not had the benefit of visiting any of these sites that I've mentioned here. So certainly, if anyone out there listening to the show has, and certainly if you have photographs, I'd love to hear from you. So certainly, write in. And of course, we can say the same regarding any of the sky bridges we're discussing in this episode, or any that we don't mention. Yes, send in your sky bridge experiences and photographs so that we may enjoy them as well. So that's it for this episode, but we will be back with a part 2 on this. We have much more to discuss regarding sky bridges, but certainly go ahead and write in. We'd love to hear from you. As always, core episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind publish in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On Monday, we do listener mail. On Wednesday, we do a short form artifact or monster fact. And on Fridays, we do Weird House Cinema. That's our time to set aside most serious concerns and just talk about a strange film.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
A rested child is a happy child. Sleep Tight Stories is a weekly podcast that brings comfort and joy to families worldwide with calming bedtime stories. The stories are relevant to children and spark wonder without overstimulation, so they can fall asleep and stay asleep. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. For a bedtime routine you'll miss when they're grown, Sleep Tight Stories.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations, prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.